It's so delicious sharing the silence. I think you guys finally settled down. Or maybe I finally settled down. I don't know. But it's. I hope you're starting to, or if you haven't before, starting to really appreciate how just turning inward, connecting with life, connecting with yourself, is not a chore. It's a gift. Not that it's always still and quiet inside. Your mind might be swirling around with where you're going and or what you're leaving behind or whatever. But even with all that swirling, there's a place of connection and stillness that can hold that all. And when you are able to connect with that stillness, it's... there's nothing quite like it. We look outside for happiness and contentment and ease or connection, and we often, mostly, unless you've practiced a bit, miss the fact that it's right in here. So I hope you take that with you. We have a few things that we want to do this morning. If we're going to end by 11. And the first is that you've been silent for the last number of days. There was a little bit of an exercise yesterday afternoon, but out there, people haven't been quiet for the last 4 or 5 days, and it'll be a little different. So what we wanted to first do is just give you a little bit of an opportunity to practice mindful speech, mindful communication, with just some very gentle exercises. First, to acknowledge that you're very wide open. So as you do these, just... getting a sense you're practicing with people who have been practicing non-judgment for the last few days, so that's a very good environment to play around with. And whatever comes up for you, whether, wow, this is a lot to let somebody in or let myself speak, it's okay. Just let whatever is here be okay. This is a little training ground. And I'll say this now. We'll after this mindful speech, we'll share some thoughts about bringing this back into the world. Each of us will have a time to speak. But something, as I'm saying this, because you're so wide open, it's like all your armoring is down, which is both good news and tricky news. I won't say bad news, but... and I think of, at the end of a retreat, it's like I'm a newborn baby, and one moment it's, wow, isn't the world amazing? And the next it's, whoa, this is way too much. You know? So just to honor that and know that... especially in these next few days, if you go through energy swings or mood swings or all kinds of thoughts like, hey, I was just getting centered for 5 days and now I seem like I'm all over the place. You know, I had it and I lost it. The idea is to just hold wherever you are with that very kind awareness, and you're not doing anything wrong. It takes a little while to go from the slow lane to the faster lane that everybody else is going in. So be really gentle and kind with yourself. particularly the non-judging part and the kind part, even more than the mindfulness part. So as we do these exercises, just keep that in mind and let whatever your experience be just the way it is. So first I, as a simple exercise to just connect with one other person, and by the way, when you are speaking or listening, it's an art to stay connected to your body, and so the words aren't just coming out of here, but really grounded. And when somebody else is speaking, I know this might be a little bit unusual or radical, really be present for them. And rather than would I get a chance to speak, you know, getting your words in, you'll be, people will love talking to you because you're actually there for them. So just keeping that in mind, both in the sending and receiving. So the first, well, I don't know if we'll have two, but just right now, turn to somebody near you, and don't say anything. And if you need a partner, then raise your hand and take a look and see if there's somebody else that needs a partner. Anyone who needs a partner, would you stand and raise your hand? Yeah. Anyone else? Here, back there, all the way in the corner. Anyone who doesn't have a partner? Okay. So first, just without getting into a deep Sufi gaze or, you know, anything too far out there, just let yourself be taking in another person and let yourself be seen. And it's sometimes helpful just to have a little metta spirit in your mind. If you can't think of anything else, it's much better than what do they think of me, to say, oh, may you be happy in your mind, you know. For a few moments, you might just close your eyes. And you're going to be going home to whatever you're going home to. And you've been here practicing connection and opening to life in a very unique way. And perhaps you've learned something. You've touched something that's been impactful for you. And just reflect, what might you take back with you? And how might you apply it? You might think of a particular situation or a particular pattern. What can you bring back that will really support you to the best extent in your life? And you might envision embodying that, or at least more and more remembering that. Okay, and now we can just take a couple of minutes each, and without getting into all the details, just the basic understanding that you might bring back, take about 2 minutes each. Maybe we can say the person with the shortest hair might go first, and then the other person can listen, and then we can switch, okay? All right, so you can, you might introduce yourself first, you know, and say hi. Then when you're ready, go. Both of you, now just, you'll get a chance to switch in a moment, but just both of you go inside for a moment and feel what's going on, whether you were talking or listening. Just reconnect with yourself for a few moments. Allow whatever is here to be here. Okay, you can switch now.
So, the other app that I use is called Bowls.
Start finishing up, and when you're finished once again, just go inside and notice your internal experience. What's it like to speak, to receive? Okay, and now I just invite you both to just have a little conversation of what that was like for you. Just a natural back and forth for a couple of minutes, a few minutes. Okay. Oh, yeah. Okay, just a few more moments. Okay, start finishing up. And once again, go inside now and feel what it's like to just have a free flow conversation with somebody. Maybe it's delicious, maybe it's challenging. Maybe you're not ready to come out, maybe you're ready to. Whatever is okay, just connect with what's true for you. Notice, besides in your mind, notice in your body. Notice in your heart. Just come back to yourself. Okay, now you can thank your partner if you'd like, and then come on back together. And we'll just take a couple of minutes for just to check in and see what that was like, what you observed. If you want to succinctly share, and particularly if there's people who haven't shared, it might be a chance to share. Yeah, all the way in the back. Thanks. Well, wait. Hang on, wait for the mic, yeah. And thank you, Carrie, for being the sound person all this whole week. And because of that, all of the talks will be up, or maybe it was mentioned up on Dharma Seed, so thank you. Yes, real close, right to your mouth, that's it. Is it on? Or it might be on mute. Is it? Touch it. Yeah, great.
Although I've sat behind my partner for the last five, six, 6 days, when we turned around and you asked us to look at each other, I could hardly open, I could barely turn my head. I told him this, and look him in the eye, and to look at anybody, per se. So the idea of connecting with someone was hard. It became easier. We're best buds now.
Oh, that didn't take long. That's good. How many people found it hard to look somebody straight on or just be with them for at the beginning? Okay. No judgment. Let your experience be just the way it is, and you might find after a while it'll come back to you. Yeah. Anything else? All the way. Yeah, no, it's okay. It'll be good. It'll be good for everyone to hear. Some people need that.
I just got a kick out of the fact that you thought this was easing us into the outside world. Can you imagine the blurt? You know, if you got that kind of deep connectivity out there. So we got to share on that level afterwards. Mm. But
Yeah, it's a lot. Yeah. Any other observations? Here, it's okay. Yeah. Yeah, Amanda.
I thought it was interesting how, because of a limited amount of time, how quickly we paraphrase our experience so that it can be digestible by another person, and then how quickly we can feel we've underrepresented our truth or maybe just made something convenient, said it in an easy way that was quick to get out. And I think what I'm learning over years, but particularly just in this moment, it might be crystallizing, is that it might be best to do what I see teachers do often, take the breath and say less, but make sure that it's what you really want to say.
Beautiful. Thank you.
Thank you.
And so this is something that was going to say, you know, people are going to ask you, well, how was it? Right? And that's a very important exchange right there. I would be judicious about sharing your deepest experiences, especially if something has touched you, really impacted you. If you get into it, by the eighth or ninth time, it's just a story. And so really hold your precious, deeper insights. Guy Armstrong has his instruction is, if somebody asks you, so how was it? He says, just say, it was great. But you can say, oh, it was rich. I learned so much. Or you might just summarize, even if it is a soundbite, they just want to know you're okay. I learned that, there's something good inside or whatever. You don't have to get into, by the third day I had this one sitting where everything turned into light and then dissolved and I don't exist and all that, you know. Don't go there. But every now and then there might be an exchange with somebody who you really do want to share because it's going to serve you and them. Okay, but be very discriminating about that. So, you got a little bit of practice. Carrie, you want to say something?
Yeah, I noticed all my life listening has been very hard for me. One, from a speedy mind, but a deeper insight I got through my sitting through this week was, it wasn't just that distraction of a speedy mind, as it dropped away and I began truly listening and taking someone in, I discovered it was, if for lack of better terminology, a crutch and a shield for my vulnerability. And that letting someone in can be scary.
Yeah, it can be. It's the thing we so long for, to connect and feel a genuine, yeah, resonance. And it's one of the scariest things of all, to either be seen or to really tune into someone else. So be very gentle with yourself. And actually, I found, you know, I was very shy growing up, and I thought I had to be some kind of witty, brilliant conversationalist. And at some point, I realized that if I'm really interested in someone, genuinely interested, then it takes the focus off of how am I, and just tuning into them. And really, I know what's going on in here. I've said it 80 times in the last hour in my whatever isn't going on in my mind. It's so much more interesting to tune into another reality. And if you're interested, people will say, it's so much fun talking to you, you know. But to let somebody in can be just a great source of joy. It just takes a little getting used to saying, oh, it's okay, and giving them that presence. So I don't know if there's anything you want to say about connection or on communication.
Well, just the last piece about, just in case we don't get to it, in the part about communicating with others, there is a tendency to have, maybe it was just me, because I love to turn people on to what I learned. And I'm sure I had people glazing over 1,000 times because of my proselytizing of sorts. And so there's always been, throughout the history of this community, an encouragement for people who leave retreats to not try to convert anyone. And to, one of our teachers, Ram Dass, recommended, be a Buddha, not a Buddhist. You don't need to carry it. You don't even have to carry an identity. You know, when you're meditating, you're not really meditating. You're just being mindful. You're not being a meditator. You're just being mindful. So you don't need to be a Buddhist. Mm-hmm. I mean, you can have a certain resonance with the teachings, but you don't have to wear it as an identity. And you'll find that you'll have much easier communication with people. So Buddha, not a Buddhist.
Mm-hmm. Great. Okay, so I want to share a few things about going home. It is an adjustment, and there's, of course, some of you are saying, yeah, I can't wait, and some of you saying, I can wait plenty. Wherever you are, it's okay. And there's also a kind of letting go, and there might even be a grieving. Oh, this is such a safe place. There's such a refuge, and I really connected with myself and found something so important. If that's so, there's just an art in letting go. And some of you who are really excited, oh, I can't wait to remember to come back to yourself. But it's going on pretty fast out there. And I wanted to share with you a shorter excerpt my favorite writer, Mark Morford, who is online. Anyone read Mark Morford here? Yeah, the best. This is from he has a weekly column. This is from an essay that he wrote, Hurry Up, Get More Done, and Die. I'll just read the last part. We are, by and large, utterly terrified of silence, stillness, spaciousness, the doing of nothing so as to feel the totality of everything. Meditation, for most, is disquieting and strange. Deep quiet feels weird and dangerous, a void aching to be filled. The internet has us convinced that the world is a roaring fire hose of urgent information, and if you can't swallow it all, well, something must be wrong with you. In any 48-hour period in the year 2010, says a stunning article I read in The Atlantic, more data was created than had been created by all of humanity in the previous 30,000 years, up until the year 2005. I went and read the study. By the year, that's in a 48-hour period, by the year 2020, that same amount of data will be created in a single hour. Go ahead, swallow hard. It is no longer possible to sit quietly on the park bench without checking your Facebook feed, chatting with Siri, or waving to the closed-circuit TV cameras. It's no longer possible to be astonished at the wonder of your footfalls along the forest path and not feel the urge to check email, find the nearest Starbucks, hipstomatic the hell out of that beautiful fallen tree. You can't just sit in your car along a quiet country road without the GPS beeping that you took a wrong turn as OnStar politely blows up your car. How easily we forget. Time expands, time contracts. Work will swell or diminish to fill a given space. You can do 10 things in an hour or one thing in 10. You can go to Spirit Rock Meditation Center for 2 solid weeks and do absolutely nothing but wander the grounds in silence for 12 hours a day, and time will look at you like you're utterly insane as your breath and body thank you for all eternity. You can, conversely, microtask until your heart implodes, and time merely will laugh and snort and find someone else to destroy. So that's what we're up against. There's such a strong pull to fill up our time and fill up with important things, or just fill up with non-important things. Oh, what can I do now? And it takes some practice to step out of that pull and reconnect with yourself. And I want to just say a word or a few words about that 10th step that I didn't really get a chance to get into, how he touched on his talk a bit. And that is the joy of simply being. Maybe you touched it, I felt it or sensed it in the room at this last sitting. Oh, how precious, some stillness, some quiet. It goes against the grain of everything that we're, all the messages that we get. But when you connect with yourself, you find that there's all the wisdom and all the answers and everything that you're needing right inside of you. And the answers are gotten not because you're trying to figure things out. That's rarely how you get the wisest answers. And in fact, it's shown that when you are in worry or in a contracted state of needing to get the answer and are frustrated, the mind is too tight to connect with the deepest truth inside. But each of you probably knows that feeling when something becomes really clear. You know that feeling? When it's, oh, this is what I need to do or what needs to happen. That's not because you're figuring out. It's because there's enough space in your mind and in your heart so that you can hear the answer as it comes through you. So learning to listen rather than figuring out the truth, learning to listen and maybe asking the right questions like, what do I really need right now for well-being or to thrive or to connect with myself? What do I really need? And listen for the answer. What will support me right now? And listen for the answer. There's the Tibetan figure Milarepa. If you know the Tibetan iconography, the great yogi Milarepa, you can always tell it's Milarepa. He has his hand to his ear, listening to the 100,000 songs of the Dharma. And that I think of as the archetype for what we're learning to do here right now. We're learning in a very direct way to listen to each moment, the truth of this moment. Oh, and now there's breathing, now there's hearing, now there's a feeling, now there's sadness, now there's joy, now there's an itch on my nose. Each one, oh, this is the truth right now. And you get more and more skillful at listening to the truth inside and in your heart as well. So just keep in mind that that joy of simply being means letting go of your agenda and connecting with the truth inside and with a place of peace that you've touched. I'm sure each of you has had moments where it's been, oh, it's nice being here and being alive right now. To keep on cultivating that, and out of that, falling in love with the moment, there is the possibility of a profound awakening that's not gained by conceptual thinking, but by resting completely in this moment and letting life move through you. You are what you're looking for, as the saying goes, and all the peace that you're looking for is right inside, and all the wisdom and all the love. And when you hear somebody saying something that sounds pretty wise, or you read a book saying, gosh, they're so wise, don't get fooled. I mentioned this in one of the groups. Don't think that, oh, they're so wise, I wish I had that wisdom. It's touching a place inside of you that says, right on. That's where the wisdom is. We're just reminding each other. So this is a practice more and more of learning to trust in the Buddha or the Kuan Yin or that still small voice that's right inside. But that means stopping the figuring out mode and just resting. It's so simple. You know, I said it on the first evening, relaxation and interest and kindness. It takes some practice to relax or to let go of the struggle. Or if there is a struggle, to just remember to be kind and hold it with kindness. You don't have to undo the struggle and saying, how do I get out of this struggle so I can just relax? Just hold it all. Oh, yes, dear. Going through a lot. Let's just take some time and regroup. And doing retreats periodically is a very powerful way to cultivate what you've touched here. I know many people, it was your first retreat, and if you've found it all interesting, compelling, useful, don't think you got it now. The first time I did a 3-month retreat, like Howie has mentioned, you know, my family really kind of got worried and freaked out, you know. But the second time I did it, they said, didn't you get it the last time? But actually, it's just there's a parallel life where it's so fascinating to explore the inner world and understand and create more connection with yourself so that your outer world has that much more fullness and wholeness of who you are. So if you have a chance to do retreats, it's the greatest gift you can give to everybody in your life. After a while, your kids might say, gee, you're so peaceful and nice when you do those things. Why don't you do another one, you know? And as I said, it's not a selfish kind of thing like I was talking about last night. You're doing it for everyone. Everyone can benefit from your consciousness and your kindness and your clarity and your goodness. So just think of it as giving everyone a gift besides yourself. Okay, so now there are a few things to keep in mind as you leave, and I'll say a few and Howie can say a bit more. First of all, it really makes a difference to sit every day. Not something to beat yourself up and feel guilty about, but just something that you're giving yourself. And I have an agreement with myself, I mentioned this to some of you, that I'll just get into the posture every day. Because once I'm there, I've been doing it a long time, and I can't remember having meditated and afterwards saying, oh, I shouldn't have done that, you know? It's hard to stop the momentum and get your body here, though. But once you hear, oh, it's like you're reconnecting with the Dharma. So sitting regularly, sitting with like-minded friendship, the whole of the holy life, as the Buddha said, having a sitting group near you, perhaps. And if you're in the Bay Area, Howie's got a really great sitting group in San Francisco, and I've got one in Berkeley, and there's up here in Marin, or you just Google insight meditation in your area and there's bound to be something there. And if you don't have a sitting group, you might start a sitting group, or you might have your like-minded friendship Dharma Seed Dharma talks or good books like that. So like-minded friends, sitting regularly, the integrity that we mentioned is really a foundation for inner peace. So keeping that in mind, those precepts that you took at the beginning, not harming, just basically a spirit of non-harming. And cultivating wholesome states and diminishing unwholesome states. Just know where happiness really lies. And I'll mention a little plug for the Joy Course, and there's flyers out there. You can do this online. The current course, there's just a few sessions left, but you can do it, and there's a suggested donation, but you can offer whatever you want. I don't want anyone to be to not be able to do it because of funds. So you can just go online. There's a course for the 10 steps, and this year we're doing a course just focusing on those three that I was talking about last night, about connection, loving ourselves, loving others, and compassionate action. So you might check that out as well. You're just starting, or whatever you've planted here, those seeds will keep on sprouting over time in ways that you can't understand or predict. Just know if you're facing in the right direction, you show up and life will support you. So I'll just stop here for now. And
you want me to go now?
Yeah.
You know, just in that spirit of starting now and seeds will blossom, you might also consider the amount of time that you've been on this particular retreat as the first half of the retreat. And this is the beginning of the second half, the integrating, or some people call it disintegrating, but it is, if you think of it as the second half, you can expect to still have some of those swings that James spoke about. And before I gave you a few little more nuts and bolts that have been really helpful to me, I thought I would echo something James included as one of his early steps of intention. And I thought that this 92-year-old woman would be a great guru for all of us as we leave the retreat. It's her five simple rules to be happy. 92 years old, petite, well-poised, and proud lady who's fully dressed each morning by 8 o'clock, with her hair fashionably coiffed and makeup perfectly applied, moved into a nursing home. Her husband of 70 years recently passed away, making the move necessary. After many hours of waiting patiently in the lobby of the nursing home, she smiled sweetly when told her room was ready. As she maneuvered her walker to the elevator, I provided a visual description of her tiny room, including the eyelet sheets that had been hung on her windows. I love it, she stated with enthusiasm of an 8-year-old having just been presented a new puppy. Mrs. Jones, you haven't seen the room. Just wait. That doesn't have anything to do with it, she replied. Happiness is something you decide on ahead of time. Whether I like my room or not doesn't depend on how the furniture is arranged. It's how I arrange my mind. I already decided to love it. It's a decision I make every morning when I wake up. I have a choice. I can spend the day in bed recounting the difficulty I have with the parts of my body that no longer work, or get out of bed and be thankful for the ones that do. Each day is a gift, and as long as my eyes open, I'll focus on the new day and all the happy memories I've stored away, just for this time in my life. She went on to explain old age is like a bank account. You withdraw from what you've put in. So my advice to you would be to deposit a lot of happiness in the bank account of memories. Thank you for your part in filling my memory bank. I'm still depositing. But then she leaves with her 5, and if for all of you writers, this might be, I found it very useful. First one, free your heart from hatred. Free your mind from worries. Live simply, give more, expect less. I thought that was kind of pithy. And just in that same spirit of letting go into this glorious being that you are, this unique expression of life that should not be any other way than the way you are, the way that life has shaped you, by all the things that have happened at all time that brought you into existence, and that spirit of letting go into your being and at least see the difference between this immediate experience that is available to you nearer than your breath every day and the story about yourself that you're telling in your mind, which is wonderful and interesting, but it can't capture this. I always think of the line, I shared it with some people, the line from James J. Audubon, where he says, if there's a difference between the bird and what the field guidebook says, believe the bird. And then just to punctuate this spirit of letting go, I want to read just a brief passage from Ajahn Sumedho that I don't think James got a chance to read on this retreat. So it's entitled Letting Go. Practice of letting go is very effective for minds that are obsessed by compulsive thinking and figuring out. You simplify your meditation practice down to 2 words, letting go. Rather than try to develop this practice and develop that and achieve this and go into that, understand this and read the sutras and study the Abhidharma and learn Pali and Sanskrit, the Majjhimaka, the Prajnaparamita, get ordinations in the Hinayana, the Mahayana, the Vajrayana, write books and become a world-renowned authority on Buddhism. Instead of becoming the world's expert on Buddhism and being invited to great international Buddhist conferences, let go. Let go. I did nothing but this for about 2 years. Every time I tried to understand or figure things out, I'd say, let go, until the desire would fade out. So I'm making it simple for you to save you from getting caught in incredible amounts of suffering. There's nothing more sorrowful than having to attend international Buddhist conferences. So some of you may have the desire to become the Buddha of the age, Maitreya, radiating love throughout the world, but I suggest just being an earthworm. Be an earthworm who knows only 2 words, let go, let go. But he goes on to say that this is not to be, it's a little bit, you still want to be determined to be awake, to stay here, and resolute in the practice, even when the going is rough, and keep reminding yourself of this Buddha, Dharma, Sangha, all that support, and stay with it, letting go of everything that arises and passes that we habitually cling to and identify with. So keep this letting go like a constant refrain in your mind so it pops up on its own no matter where you are. And one of the things that keeps us really bound up in daily life is the way we think about daily life. And even the way you think about leaving the retreat, there's a tendency to frame the whole process of leaving in a very conventional way, which on one hand makes a lot of sense, on another hand, it's not exactly how we experience it. And that conventional way is, I'm going to take my little practice, little me, and go out into that big world. And as soon as I frame it that way, I get a little anxious. I don't know about you. Get a little anxious, big, or you may get excited, but mostly it's little me, big world, and I've got to somehow take this little thing and put it into my life, integrate it into my life. And so then we start saying, how can I keep this? How can I integrate this in my life? And get anxious. And then I realized one day as I was heading to New York City after a 3-month retreat, I realized, and you've heard this theme over and over in the retreat, I don't go anywhere. I'm always exactly where I am. And in fact, even when I leave IMS, Insight Meditation Center, and drive to New York City, I'm still right where I am. So New York City's coming to me. So I started to reframe it, and it made a huge difference in my anxiety level in my life in general. Instead of integrating my practice into my life, it's integrating my life into my practice. That's always right where I'm sitting. And then I noticed in sitting right where I am and letting myself be and trusting that a little more, that, you know, all I really have to handle if I'm integrating my life into my practice, all I have to handle is a moment at a time. I can't handle the next one, and I can't handle the one that's already gone. This one, I can handle. So then in real time, I realized in some ways there's no integration. There's just unfolding present moments. And you've trained, what we've been doing here is giving us all the, hopefully an increasing confidence that you have the capacity to just do that. Moment at a time. It doesn't go beyond that. And then everything James said about sitting regularly in support of Sangha. For me, Sangha is the lifeblood it's the third jewel. It's not just a nice idea of like-minded friends and community. It really is essential. I don't know anybody that does this alone. I have never met anybody. And I know for me that it is just kept the fire burning so much. And so if you don't have a sitting group in your neighborhood, start one, find other people. They don't have to be insight meditation practitioners. Just be with other people regularly who remind you, reflect back to you the values that you want to carry. Reflect back to you that essential beauty and miraculousness of your being as it is, not as, you know, not as James was talking about, you know, what's wrong with you. Let's see, what else? Keep a sense of humor. As Wavy Gravy says, you know, if you don't laugh a lot, it's not funny. And then just some reflections that I've used a lot in my daily life ever since I got a chance to meet the Dalai Lama by accident. At my 60th birthday, I was roasted as the Forrest Gump of Dharma scene, because I stumbled on the Dalai Lama and I didn't know who he was and when I was traveling and as a 22-year-old. And he sent me to sit with a teacher who he sent most Westerners to, who spoke good English. And over for 2 weeks, I heard him give essentially the same teaching. And it was the teaching on what's traditionally called the four mind-changing reflections that turn your mind toward happiness, toward joy and well-being. And they're typically now called the four reminders. And so the reminders are just the preciousness of your life. Think every single day about the preciousness of this birth and the miracle that came to be. And it's not just to think about in awe of how we come to be, but the preciousness of this time that we have here and to make something of our life and to use it at a time where the Dharma is available, teachings are available, practice at a level that has never been seen in the history of the world. Never have all the different strains of Buddhism, all the different wisdom traditions come so close to us and not be so compartmentalized. And so This is a feast of time, an opportunity for practice to take advantage of that preciousness of your life. Two, and that just leads right into a daily reflection on impermanence. You know, one of the most commonly chanted things in monasteries is anicca vada sankhara upadavaya damino upakitava. I don't need the whole thing, but all things that arise have the nature to pass away. To be in harmony with this truth brings freedom, brings happiness, well-being. And it's often our contentiousness with change and impermanence that brings so much suffering to our lives. So letting that sink in every day, impermanence. Not morbidly, but just so that you appreciate that things have not gone away yet. They're here, you're here. And so the poignancy of every moment. Third, that every action of body, of speech, of mind, everything you do produces results. And the Buddha's radical contribution to that fact was that those results are determined by your intention, by the motivation behind them. So every day, having a conscious, planting a seed of a conscious motivation to be of benefit, to be non-harming, and then to, every day to reflect on that your actions matter and they have results. And if you want to have happiness, you have to plant the seed of it, like the 92-year-old woman said. A little bank account. And then last but not least, just reflecting every day on the defects or the challenges of being human, defects of samsara, that everybody's life is marked with some measure of unsatisfactoriness. It's not just you. That everybody's life, as one story says, has 83 problems. And the Buddha can't help any of us with the 83 problems. But he can help us with the 84th problem. And the 84th problem is we don't think we should have any problems. And so it's just to over and over reflect. Yeah, everybody's life is marked with dukkha. It doesn't take a lot of time to do a daily reflection. And it doesn't take a lot of time to do a quickie in your life. You know, James says he gets in the posture. Just want to share a quickie. You find your body. How long did that take? Then you find one breath. How long did that take? Then you do a little scan of your body. And there's already, even in that few seconds, there's a stilling that happens, regardless of what's going on in your day. Then you scan your mood. How long did that take? And then you kind of feel the residue of what you were noodling about a few seconds before. Quickie, done. And you are rearranged. You have already arrived at the mountaintop again. How long did that take? So all this notion of I don't have time to practice or I let it slip out of my life, no excuses. Just practice. And if you're not, get around people who will remind you to. I've already hit my limit. I could go on and on. Anyway, but just to say while I still have the mic that it's been a true joy to be with my team here. We have had a love fest. I've had a love fest with each person that I've been with and met on this retreat, and I am so appreciative of your practice, your generosity. You know, we have a mutually beneficial relationship. You take care of me, I take care of you, and it just keeps that spiral that Deborah talked about going. And it's a beautiful thing. And so I'm so grateful and I'm so encouraged by everyone's practice here. There's not one person that I worry about because I really do see that you're cooking. And the fact that you came here is such a mark of purity already and understanding that peace and happiness and joy are an inside job. So good luck. Thank you.
It's really been an honor and a pleasure to be with you this week. And for me, it all boils down to one word, which is kindness. Kindness to ourselves, kindness to each other, kindness to our communities, our larger communities, and to the planet. And while I'm thinking of it, someone asked me for the name of the poem, the author. I read a poem on kindness the second day, and it was by, the last name of the author is Nye, N-Y-E. So you can just Google it. It's called Kindness. I want to just review with you for a moment the self-compassion break. It's such an incredible tool. And if you're going to the airport, for example, you're going to be finding it much busier than anything here. But you can just practice it. It's like lifting very small weights. And if you practice on the small stuff, then it gets ingrained, and then you can use it for the bigger stuff. So I want you to just imagine a fairly medium weight problem, but not too heavy. Just bring up something, maybe anticipated or that you're experiencing right now, and do experience it. See if you can feel it in your body. So the first step is mindfulness, that is to acknowledge this is suffering. Or you can make up your own words to that aim, like, ouch, or this hurts, this is painful. Whatever words do it for you, but just acknowledging, yeah, this is suffering. And the second step is the common humanity we've all been talking about. Everybody suffers. You're not wrong or bad because you're suffering. It's part of life. So the second step is just to acknowledge everyone suffers. Our suffering is part of life. And the third step is self-kindness versus self-judgment. That is the intention. And it is, may I be kind to myself? You can put your hand on your heart if you want. That actually increases the opiates and the oxytocin, so it's a very soothing kind of thing to do for yourself. And just press into the right pressure so you really feel that kindness there coming from you. And to just say to yourself, may I be kind to myself? And truly, you can do this in less than a minute. And it's very nourishing and nurturing. The other thing I want to remind you of is the daily paragraph. Just jotting down. It can take you 5 minutes. But just responding to yourself. I do it from the vantage point of a wise guide. And of course, I know it's me. But I write out, you know, Jane, dear, I'm so sorry you're suffering. This was rough. Anyone would have a rough time with this, but why don't you find some way to take a little break and really refuel? You know, something like that. Boom, you're done. You know, but it's just a really good thing to do for yourself. So I want to remind you that the question is not, am I good enough, but what's good for me? And of course, in our studies, we know that me doesn't stop here, that we're so interdependent. It's really the whole world. So what's good for us is really a good way to look at it. And as Jackie DeShannon, those of you who are my age, remember her singing, "What the World Needs Now is Love, Sweet Love." It does. So we're all capable of giving that, and it's so nourishing to do so. So thanks so much for spending the week. It was really an honor.
Check, check. There we go. So before I say anything about, you know what I'm going to talk about, right? I do want to simply point out that James wrote a fabulous book called Awakening Joy. And we know that there weren't very many for sale here, but I have loved that book all these years, and you can get them on Amazon. Is that what you would suggest? It's wonderful. And of course, Howie has a new book that's out there. Now, they didn't know I was going to advertise their books, but anyway, I think his are still out on the table, but I really want you all to know that James's book is a true resource in so many ways. You know, all the quotes he reads, they're in the book. So it's also been just a joy to be here with you. All your notes, all the joy I've seen in your faces. So I'm reminding you that what has happened here in the body has been something that you have done. I just made a space, and you came into the space. And you went, wait a minute, I like this. And it was scary for some of you and upsetting, and a lot of you went up and down with it. But your body is a great gift. In fact, it's the gift. And so I read some of this yesterday. I'd like to read a little more of it now. This is from, again, Gil Fronsdahl's essays on Buddhism. The Buddha himself said, "There's one thing that when cultivated and regularly practiced leads to deep spiritual intention, to peace, to mindfulness and clear comprehension, to vision and knowledge, to a happy life here and now, and to the culmination of wisdom and awakening." And what is that one thing? Mindfulness centered on the body. Elsewhere, the Buddha has said, if the body is not cultivated, the mind cannot be cultivated. If the body is cultivated, then the mind can be cultivated. Now, this is Gil writing. You can find shelf after shelf of Western books on Buddhism. No offense.
Mine's not on Buddhism.
Okay, good. That make virtually no mention of the body. Now, Awakening Joy definitely is mentioning the body. I haven't read Howie's book. All right.
It's all about the body.
Anyway, and this gives or reinforces the impression that Buddhism is an intellectual or mentally oriented religion. In contrast to this impression, I understand Buddhist practice, especially the practice of mindfulness, to be an invitation to experience our bodies and to embody our experience. Or as the scripture on the four foundations of mindfulness puts it, to experience the breath in the breath and the body in the body. Your body is a vessel. Your body is a temple. It is with you wherever you go. It's home. It's there. So when you're at work, you're in the temple. You can play in the temple. You can laugh in the temple. You can have sex in the temple. You can sing in the temple. All the things that we did are listed on a little flyer out there, and I invite you to use them as reminders. Don't think, oh, I can't do that, because that was with Evelyn leading and the nice music and yada yada. Be a child. Be a child with your children. Be a child with your grandmother. Have the energy of earth, the energy of fire. Walk into your farmer's market and enjoy the dance of community. When you drink water, feel the dance of that healing water. It's all there in you. if many of you have said to me, what about that great music? Can I have some of that great music? What was that great music? If you'd like my playlist, it's yours. So on this sheet is my email and other contact info. If you email me, I'll send you the whole playlist. I teach every day at the Berkeley Y. And I do many things as a movement therapist and healer. I visit celebrations, weddings, healings, funerals, offices. So feel free to contact me for advice. Someone here is going to be teaching mindfulness in a prison soon or in the county jail, right? So be in contact with us all for advice, too. Thank you.
Just to correct everything, I will. No, just kidding.
Just to clarify the truth here.
No, just a little bit about this book, and it was really the passion of this editor that came to me and said, "There's." Even though many people might benefit who have practice, because it's like a meditation, it kind of points you to the life of the present moment. She said that there's not a book that really serves what she called a consumer that doesn't know anything about meditation and who may be a little bit put off by Buddhism or any particular sectarianism. And so I wrote a book that never mentions the Buddha. And only uses the word mindfulness once, but just constantly points to what any of us can do anytime. And so people have been giving it a lot to their family members who they don't necessarily want to convert, but they want to at least reassure their family members that they haven't gone off the deep end. And I teach 4 times a year in Texas, and several people bought 20 copies because of the consciousness in that neighborhood. But you know, that's sorry. Love Texas, and I love Texans, but. But nevertheless, it is, you know, it was meant to be a gift book as well as a companion for anyone. But so buy them for your family and enjoy it. I think I don't think they're any more up here, but they're available on all the sites. So thank you for your support of the book. It for those who did buy it, and again, good luck. Good luck.
So. Just a few more things, and we need to wrap up. Actually, one thing about the books, there were supposed to be a bunch of them out, but they weren't. How many people got books during this retreat? My books. Okay. Then. Oh, so you got them during the retreat. How many people got them during the retreat before last night? And you got it from there?
Yeah, I got money
from money. Okay, all right. We were wondering, because there were only 8 at the, when we opened, we went there. Good. There's no more now, are there? Yeah, we were looking. But great. You can get it from wherever you buy books. All right, I want to say something about Spirit Rock. This whole center has come into being out of the generosity of people who've valued the teachings. Obviously, you see, we're just about to open that down the hill, which was $17.3 million campaign that just manifested. That was our goal. That's what we got. There's under $300,000 in pledges to be paid to complete the fundraising for this phase, and many people here have offered their support, and we're so grateful. 46% of our operating budget comes from contributions, so we hope that that you'll continue to think of this as your home, and as the Dharma has been sustained for thousands of years just on the generosity of others. Bobby Perez, who's from the from Spirit Rock, is going to be hosting a reception. If on your way out, if you want to stop in the dining hall for and to enjoy some fresh baked cookies and a chance to connect right after here, there'll be information on our operating fund and capital campaign and all our scholarships. We last year we gave over $500,000 in scholarships so people could sit here and come ask questions, view the Sangha of 1,000 Buddhist scrolls that are going to be hung in the new hall, and consider this your home. It's amazing. We have this beacon of consciousness. There are a few throughout the world, but this is a special place that people can come, connect with themselves, and then go out into the world and make a difference. So it's been really a true joy to be with you this week and to have this team with Deborah on it too. We're going to do another one next year. Just looked at the dates, end of May to begin, May 30th to June 4th or something like that. So hope to see you on the Dharma Trail. And before we close with a dedication and metta, want to do one more awakening joy exercise that hope you'll get into.
Two?
You want to do what?
Yeah, I think we're going to do two exercises. Yeah. One will be, and I hope she can tolerate this, to wish Jane a happy birthday. So let's all sing.
Yeah.
You want to accompany or do?
Yeah.
Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday, dear Jane. Happy birthday to you.
Okay, and for me, when you do the Joy Course, one of the things that I strongly encourage is singing every day. If you get stuck or you're kind of in a funk, sing. Sing the blues. That's fine. That's what the blues are for. But sing or let some creative expression come out of you. And there's a number of different Dharma songs we could do. But the key one, I think, that just embodies what we're in need of is a little help from our friends. So this is the Sangha song, and sing it with me. Okay? Let's see. I don't know if I want to turn it down just a little bit. So it's a little bit... What would you think if I sang out of tune? Would you stand up and walk out on me? Lend me your ears. Lend me your ears and I'll sing you a song. And I'll try not to sing out of key. Oh, I get by with a little help from my friends. I get high with a little help from my friends. Oh, I'm gonna try with a little help from my friends. What do you do when your love is away? What do you do when your love is away? Does it worry you to be alone? How do you feel? How do you feel by the end of the day? Are you sad because you're on your own? No, I get by with a little help from my friends. I get high with a little help from my friends. Oh, I'm gonna try with a little help from my friends. Do you need anybody? I need somebody to love. Could it be anybody? I want somebody to love. Would you believe in our love at first sight? Yes, I'm certain that it happens all the time.
What do you see when you turn out the light? I can't tell you, but I know it's mine. Oh, I get by with a little help from my friends. I get high with a little help from my friends. Oh, I'm gonna try with a little help from my friends. Do you need anybody? I just need someone to love. Could it be anybody? I want somebody to love. Oh, I get by with a little help from my friends. Oh, I get high with a little help from my friends. Oh, I'm gonna try with a little help from my friends. Yes, I get by with a little help from my friends. With a little help from my friends. Okay, that's your assignment. So now we can dedicate all the good that we've done here together, all the moments of mindfulness that we've shared and accrued, all the wholesome states that we've touched, all the ways that our heart has opened and our mind has seen clearly, all the good that we've created and shared. May it ripple out and be for the benefit of all beings everywhere. May all know the goodness inside of them. May they share their love well. May they care for this earth in a loving way. May all know the highest happiness and peace. And may our wonderful, amazing planet receive all the love and support and healing energy to continue to sustain and be so generous with this life for all of us. Thank you very, very much. I think at this point, if you would take your zabutons and cushions and put them back and take everything with you and share your love well, as Emerson says, scatter joy. Thank you.